Golf Smarter number 271, published on February 22, 2011, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Golf Q&A with Jeff Ritter at our Scottsdale Adventure.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Scottsdale Adventure, Jeff.
Yay!
Fred, I've had this date circled on my calendar for at least 6 months.
And I only invited you 3 months ago. So.
Well,
yeah, but we all knew.
I set forth the intention that if Fred Green ever had a Golf Smarter Adventure in Scottsdale, I'd want to be a special guest. So, looks like it's happened. And
so I called you and said, "Would you come and join us for dinner one night?" You went, "Wow, I already circled this on my calendar."
Exactly.
This is so good.
Exactly. I said, "Wow, free steak dinner."
There you go. Thank you, Dixon Golf.
That's right. Thank you, Dixon.
So you had
you were about
to ask me a question. What we've just enjoyed a great dinner, our second Golf Smarter Adventure dinner with our group, and we're going to meet everybody in a few minutes. But our special guest is Jeff Ritter of Jeff Ritter Golf, who we've talked to numerous times on the Golf Smarter podcast, and I really want to thank you for coming out and sharing this with us tonight.
I think this is our fourth or fifth show, maybe.
I think it's our fourth. Yeah. Definitely. Our third in the last couple months just because of the adventure. But there's been a lot of people who've been following the adventure closely and wanting, unfortunately they couldn't join us, but they are joining us in spirit, so we want to bring them along with us. So we were just having a conversation, you were asking me questions.
I was interviewing you.
You really were. They were like, turn on the recorder.
Well, the thing is, I was just really intrigued about how you got involved with the Golf Smarter podcast. I mean, a lot of times when you're coming from my perspective, you have the ability to do a TV show or a radio show, or you do television, but you really don't get to know that much about the person who's actually, you know, running the show, so to speak. So, you know, being part of this event tonight's been really cool because I've heard more about your background in media in general and some of the cool projects you've been involved with, and sort of intrigued as to how you sort of ended up where you are now as, you know, the owner and producer of one of the best podcasts that's available out there.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
No, it's a fantastic show, and I love being on it.
We're talking about golf.
Yeah.
A lot of podcasts out there.
But one of my questions for you is someone who covers golf instruction is how it's affected your game personally, and if that effect has been as positive as you've wanted to be, or if along the way you sort of lost yourself amidst the sea of tips that are out there and the people that you cover and the ideas that you entertain each week on your show.
It's definitely had an impact on my game. When I started doing these interviews, and I really don't like calling them interviews. I really like to say that these are conversations that I just happen to be recording. I'm very lucky that I get to talk to some of the best instructors, the unsung heroes of golf instruction, and get free advice all the time. And it's had a huge impact on my game. When I started doing these shows at the end of 2005, I was probably about a 19 or so. And I've been down as low as 11.9. I'm right at 13.1 right now. So it's had a huge impact on my game. But I think the thing that all during that time, I'm trying to remember. I think I've had one golf lesson in that amount of time.
Really?
Yeah.
All free?
No. Like swing mechanics golf lesson.
Oh, I see.
Working with an instructor. Now, I've had a lot of guys who set me up in front of their video cameras and said, you know, don't let anyone ever compare you to Tiger. And then first thing they do is say, now look what you're doing and look what Tiger does.
Right.
You know, I've done that and that screwed me up big time. But because I think over these number of years that my the mental game for me has gotten so much stronger, that my scores have gone down. That I approach the game so much differently and don't get so caught up in the overall thing. I'm looking at each shot, and it's like if something happens wrong, oh well, that happens.
Yeah.
When things happen wrong two or three times in a row, then everything goes to crap, and then it's awful. But yeah, my game has improved tremendously.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
It's good news for people like me. Yeah.
Well, exactly, and it's because of guys like you that it has gotten better, because you're the kind of instructor that does more than just teaches swing mechanics. You deliver the entire package. That's why I like bringing you along, and I like asking you a lot of questions, because you talk about not just, I think in our last conversation we talked about this, you call it integrated golfing, right?
Integrated
instruction?
Integrated coaching.
Coaching.
Yeah. And it's all about trying to help people not only play better, but live better. And there's so many things you can talk about in a golf lesson that aren't just about fixing hooks and slices. I mean, there's lessons in learning a motor skill. There's lessons in managing your emotions. There's lessons in strength, stability, mobility. There's lessons in nutrition and how what you eat can affect the energy level that you have and your ability to maintain focus. And for me, my clients really become my friends. That's the best thing about being a golf instructor is people come out and they say, you know, Jeff, I'd like you to help me improve my game today. And they're coming to me because they believe that I can do that. And what better position to be in as a business person to be able to share an hour with someone and really deliver what they're looking for and not have it be, you know, a widget or a cup of coffee or a T-shirt. It's actually real, tangible information that they get excited about. And then they go to dinner and they tell their friends about it. And then all of a sudden I introduce them to someone like Kate, who has a nutritional perspective, and also they start.
Kate's
here. Exactly.
Jeff brought Kate along. Thank you.
So they start eating different, and they get excited about the things that she has to introduce. And I send them to, someone that specializes in sports psychology, mental performance, and all of a sudden they start to reconsider what they're doing in life in general, not just what they're thinking about on the golf course, but maybe I don't want to be an accountant anymore. Maybe I don't want to be a doctor anymore, or whatever. I mean, it's just this whole.
That's part of the problem with golf.
Yeah, this one thing. Yeah.
People want to give up their real jobs to become, you know, I've invented the new tea.
Yeah.
It's going to change the world.
Well, go back.
But I think the key to being happy in life is to be able to follow your bliss. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you can actually, you know, sit down for a few moments and ask yourself, you know, what do I really want in life? A lot of people never ask that question. I mean, a lot of times people's lives are built on things like, likelihood or practicality. But for myself, I've been lucky to follow this journey where I'm doing what I want to do every day.
And you're a very lucky man.
And I wake up, yeah, absolutely. And
you better appreciate that.
Yeah, but everyone can do that. Everyone can do
yes,
that.
Yes, but they are afraid of it, too.
Absolutely.
And it's those who attack it and realize it that need to bring this attitude of gratitude with them.
Absolutely. But if someone can sit down, they can say, this is what I want, and then not be afraid to take immediate action towards that goal without hesitating and asking themselves, how in the world am I going to make that happen? You know, then they're going to set forth a journey that's going to be more amazing than they could ever possibly imagine. So a great friend of mine, he's a performance coach, mental performance coach. His name is Chris Doris. I think I mentioned him on the show a couple times. He's got this audio series called Creating Your Dream, but it's all about really, you know, learning how to, you know, fearlessly and effortlessly manifest your greatest desires on the golf course or off. And he's got this series of steps or his mantra, which is decide, declare, and then do what it takes. So first of all, you have to decide, you know, what is it that I want? You have to ask yourself that critical question. Once you decide what you want and you believe that you're being authentic with your desire, you can't be afraid to declare it, you know, to tell someone, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to win the club championship. I'm going to break 90, 80, 70. I'm going to start taking 2 days off a week and play more golf. You know, I'm going to move down to Key West and open up a salsa shop. When it's something I've never done before, I just happen to like salsa. If you can do those things and declare them, now all of a sudden you've set some motion. And now you have to say what it's going to take to do that. And it's just amazing what you can accomplish. So with myself, it's all been about asking myself as a coach, you know, what do I want my brand to be like? what do I want my daily life to look like? Where do I want to go? And then not be afraid to tell people. Once I tell people, they're in a position to help me. And then from there, it's just all about doing what it takes and not being afraid of the outcome. So if you can do that, you can shoot the kind of scores you want to shoot. You're going to enjoy the journey. You can change your diet. You can change your body. You can change anything.
I want to break that down, because of all those things, you know, of opening a salsa shop to being the club championship. I think that what I love to do with Golf Smarter is to bring that down to the average golfer who has a life and doesn't get to play as much as they would like to.
Sure.
They love to play the game. But we can bring that down to any given shot. Mm-hmm. And it's really the commitment to that shot that I want to bring all of those things that you can do to, you know, being at the moment, being present in the moment to make that shot. Isn't that what we're trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. You know, when somebody has this goal of getting milk at the store, you know, they never consider the possibility that they won't be able to get milk. They just get in their car and they go and they get it. They take it. They walk in the store. They don't go, oh, I don't know, where they put the milk this week. I'm going to walk around. And what's going to happen if I can't get milk when I go home? Is someone going to be upset with me? No. I mean, they know what they want, and then they take it. So a lot of times in golf, when you get on the first tee or the fifth tee or the 18th tee, before you ask yourself what you want, you start considering all the things that can go wrong. I got out of bounds on the left. I got water on the right. It's a 230-yard carryover long fescue to get to the short grass.
There's no on the left.
Yeah, exactly. So you start thinking about all the things you don't want first. And all these things are always, you know, in your mind as it relates to being able to perform and hit your shot. So the big thing I try and get people to do, first of all, is acknowledge their surroundings. You know, there's bunkers on the left. Good. There's water on the right. You know, these, to me, aren't hazards. They're actually markers that the course architect put in place to help me decide where to go.
To help you decide, they're also distractions. They're put there to help distract you from what your target is, from a golf architect perspective, aren't they?
Well, they can be distracting if you allow them to be distracting. And the big thing is that I don't look at a bunker as good or bad. I don't look at water as good or bad. It just is. It's just sand. It's just water. It's just an out of bounds stake. You know, it's just an oak tree.
You can probably hit out of the sand.
Just an oak tree. I can. I'm very good at it. But it's important. See, a lot of times people they try and block out all these things they don't want. And everyone knows that the moment you try and block something out, it just becomes bigger.
Right.
So, you know, what your mind attaches itself
don't
to.
Don't hit it in the water. Hit it in the water.
What your mind attaches itself to, you often create. So basically, when I'm helping someone try and get more comfortable on the golf course, especially in competition, it's all about, number one, acknowledging surroundings. It's all there. We know it's there. Okay. So now say to yourself, you know, what do I want? Well, what I want to do is I want to hit it, you know, 265 yards, just down the right-hand side, in line with that really tall pine tree, and it's going to peel off the pine tree, and it's going to land about 5 feet left of the pine tree, then it's going to bounce, 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 roll out, and it's going to settle right in the middle of the fairway next to, you know, the sprinkler head that I've seen 150 times. So when you ask yourself, what do I really want, and focus on it, now you have the opportunity to actually create it. You set forth that intention. So in terms of a pre-shot routine, a pre-shot routine usually falls within a see, feel, and then trust mentality. So acknowledge your surroundings, see what you want, and make sure that the picture is as vivid and clear as it could possibly be. Now here comes the feel component, and that's the whole reason for a practice swing. I like to call them rehearsal swings, just like the dress rehearsal in a play. So I'm not practicing, that's what I do when I'm on the range. Now I'm rehearsing. So I'm going to try and draw the ball into the flag or fade the ball into the flag. I got to feel the swing that's going to make that image a reality. So once you see and feel, now it's all about falling into that trust mode. And trusting is all about really believing that once you make your swing, everything's going to be okay. And I like to use the skydiving analogy. So, you know, skydiving is something that for some people it's really fun. I mean, it's a life experience. I mean, they go screaming, you know, down to the bottom, but screaming total joy, excitement.
And for parents, it's sheer hell.
Right, right. Yeah, it is. For other people, skydiving is the worst thing they've ever done. Someone talked them into going up in an airplane. They're standing on the side of the airplane looking out at the ground below. And then finally, someone pushes them out, and they got their eyes closed, and they're crying, and they're screaming in terror. But you have two people that are doing the exact same thing, and one person is having an out-of-body, amazing life experience. The other person is saying, I'll never do that again. You know, I'm going to defriend the person that talked me into this. And the big difference is one person trusts that the parachute's going to open, and the other person has a certain level of doubt as to whether or not it's going to open. So in
that's right.
So in golf, you know, anytime you make a swing that isn't your best swing, chances are it's being influenced by some level of doubt that you're going to get what you want. So we've all been over shots before, where
today
we just happened to, yeah. I think we talked about this before. We've all been over shots before, where you just knew you were going to hit it good. Maybe it was the lie that you were on.
Bob's nodding his head over there.
Yeah. Maybe it's the fact that on this particular hole at your home course, you just like the way the hole sets up. You like the way that you see it from tee to green. Maybe you've always hit good drives before. But something about that situation makes you feel good. And when you feel good, you make good golf.
It's all about the confidence, yeah.
Of course, conversely, everyone's been overshot where they kind of knew they were going to hit it bad. You know, you don't like the way the ground's sitting below your feet. You don't like the wind at your back. You make a swing and the ball goes out of bounds and you go, you know what? I knew I was going to do that. I should have stepped away. Well, the thing is that your golf swing doesn't change that much from swing to swing to swing. Even though you feel like it does, it really doesn't. You know, if we put you in a 3D motion analysis program and look at your swing, your kinetic chain of events would probably be identical on every shot that you hit. But the thing that does change is your emotion behind the action. That changes a lot. So there's a basic mantra, which is think good, feel good, play good. And if you can have a positive emotion before you swing, there's a really good chance you're going to unlock your greatest swings more often.
So how does that impact you as a coach when you're teaching somebody on a driving range, on a mat, or even if they're lucky, on grass, versus taking them out on the course? Those are two, because what you just talked about is all course related, and yet most of your coaching is on a mat.
Right.
It's in a range where it's just hit over and over again, and those factors don't come into play.
Well, they do a little bit. So with the learning process, and we were talking about this earlier, before you shut us down, you said wait for the show to talk about this.
Yeah. Well, there was all this great conversation about golf going on. I said, no, we want to save this for the recording, please.
You know, golf, the game of golf, practicing and playing, it's all about learning and performing. So if you are trying to change your golf swing, then you're actually trying to learn how to do something new. Your golf swing is a habit. It's just a habit. Just like chewing with your mouth open is a habit. So what you got to be able to do is you have to create an awareness of what you're doing now, and then you have to say to yourself, well, what would I like to do instead? So when you're in learning mode, you're actually trying to make some kind of a change, a physical change to a motor skill. When you're performing, you're trying to hit the ball from A to B, you're trying to get the ball in the hole, you're trying to shoot your lowest score. So in a coaching situation like you're talking about, it's really important that I get my students to be in a learning mode so they're not mixing learning and performing. Because when you try and learn and perform at the same time, you very often do a lousy job of both and you don't make any progress at all. So part of the learning mode is learning how to suspend judgment of outcome. So when someone's trying to learn how to do something new, maybe their club shaft points across the line at the top, maybe they're laid off, maybe they're having issues with their posture, their balance. They're looking at a result as an indication of success or progress. And very often, if they don't see what they want, they'll actually start to taint the learning environment and not make the progress that they're looking for. So part of me teaching the on-course stuff has a lot to do with creating the right mindset for the off-course stuff, so that when somebody understands how nothing is good nor bad, right? There's no success or failure. There's only results. If you can learn how to see a ball maybe in a practice setting not fly where you want, but understand the relevance of what we're doing in this particular situation, then when you go to the golf course, if a ball goes right, it goes left, you don't all of a sudden get into this emotional roller coaster based on outcomes. So the final part of the routine, you got see, feel, trust, and then it's suspend judgment of outcome. So if your ball goes to the right, it's not good or bad, it just went over there.
Right.
It's just over there. So what am I going to do? I'm going to walk up to it, and then I'm going to go through start all over again.
Right. So like George and I were going through this yesterday. Didn't we talk about this,
that's
George?
Right.
And it was like, it's about the process, not the outcome. And this is one of the things that I've learned over time doing all these conversations, that it's about the process, not the outcome, right?
That's exactly right. And you did it very well, too. I will
well,
say
thank
that.
You. Well, extremely you're an easy target, buddy.
No, but we did have a great time, and you practiced that to perfection. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Before we have to go on, and this is very funny, as the chocolate cake is this mousse?
Yes.
Are we having mousse for dessert?
Yes.
All right.
Canadian mousse.
Canadian
what
mousse.
What do the Canadians say, though?
What do the Canadians say when the mousse comes?
The ship has landed.
The ship has landed.
Thank you. No, actually, this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with 75,000 downloadable titles, including New York Times bestsellers, all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. And if you'd like to get a free audiobook of your choice, please try it out at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And we were trying to figure out a book. We were having a conversation earlier in dinner. Lou, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. You had a suggestion for a book to do for... because we're not talking about golf books necessarily. That's not what you do at dinner every time. Well, this group, we've been talking about golf nonstop. But you had a suggestion of a book that is available on Audible.
Yeah, sure, Fred. Yeah, everybody is talking about the Academy Awards and who ought to win the Academy Awards, and social networking is certainly up there, and King's Speech and some of the others. And, you know, it'd be a really good take for your listeners to, you know, pick up the book on accidental billionaires and, you know, explore the story of Facebook and, you know, how it, you know, came into being. The personalities are really very, very live. I'm sure the Audible book is just absolutely spectacular. So I'd highly recommend it.
There you go. The Accidental Billionaires, The Founding of Facebook by Ben Mezrich. I looked it up before we got to do this. So, again, if you'd like to get the audio book of your choice, any one for free, but this week we're recommending you check out The Accidental Billionaires, The Founding of Facebook. Go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. All right. Speaking of the internet, Jeff, you've got a very cool new iPhone app that has just come out that I'd love to talk to you about, because Golf Smarter is included. But besides that, tell me about your new iPhone, your free iPhone app.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a free iPhone app. It's Jeff Furter Golf. It's an instructional app. And it's the launch date's probably going to be about March 31st. That's a solid date. So
okay.
Look for it around then. And, of course, you know, through all the social media outlets that I use, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, if you follow any of my content on the internet, you'll certainly know when it hits. But, you know, the big thing is about creating value for golfers. I really kind of fell in love with the whole idea of being able to do videos on YouTube and connect with a worldwide audience and really expand my brand outside of the 25-mile radius that I live in. And basically the success of the YouTube channel, which now has almost 3 million views on it.
On your YouTube channel?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a stud when it comes to your YouTube stuff.
Well, one of my clients a couple of years ago, he said, you know what, you know, we should really try and, you know, leverage those ideas and try and get them out to the app audience as well. So basically we created Jeff Furter Golf. It's got 50 HD videos, five of which are a free portion of the app. Beyond that, we have actually repurposed some of the YouTube clips. And we also have a lot of bonus material, some of the life lessons-based tips that are part of the book that I have, which is Your Kid Ate a Divot, a number of radio programs, which total up to about 2 hours of content. Two of those shows are actually preview shows with the Golf Smarter podcast.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I was when I was watching the video on YouTube explaining it, I was like, wow, Golf Smarter's on there.
That's right.
That is so
that's
cool.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, you know, people love free content, and we're really excited about the prospect that a lot of people globally will actually want to download this. And, you know, I didn't want to create a free app that when someone downloads it, they're like, oh, this is all I get. I mean, I want to actually, you know, over-deliver in terms of exciting, creative content that people really haven't seen before. And I've been very lucky, really, the last 8 years of my career to be heavily involved with creating golf-based media. You know, Golf Punk magazine in the UK, now Golf Digest. I've been doing more things with them on a regular basis. Golf Tips magazine out of Los Angeles and different radio programs. So it's something I really love, and I love getting out there. And you know, a lot of times people look at coaching.
We'll get to the A position, too. It's a new one.
That's been a big thing, too, the A position. Yeah. But a lot of people look at coaching and they think about, you know, coaching one person at a time. But, you know, really with these different types of media, I love being able to connect with a lot of golfers globally on a lot of different levels. It's not just about fixing golf swings. You know, some of it's life lessons based. Some of it's fitness based. Some of it's nutrition based. I just like really delving into all the aspects of living and playing better, and I've tried to really involve all those types of concepts within the app. So hope people are going to enjoy it. I'm really excited to get it out. It's going to be very creatively driven. We've got some great people in terms of our artistic team behind it, putting their ideas together. So you know, golf products generally have a certain look and feel to them, and I think this one's going to be a little bit different.
Awesome. I wish you all the luck in the world on that. And talking about actually... Bob and Rich weren't here at the time. We were kind of talking before dinner started. And you have this, I really want you to share this amazing story that you have about something that's happening based on your YouTube videos and the exposure that you've gotten and the type of people you're now getting to work with.
It's really been an amazing phenomenon. And actually, I was down at the PGA show about 2 weeks ago. And there's a group down there called AMF Golf Management. It's sort of a consulting group for golf professionals to help them with, you know, positive business practices. And based on the success of my YouTube channel, they had me come down and actually do a social media seminar on YouTube. And a lot of times, you know, people are being approached these days about social media, what it means. Does it actually work? Does it actually work? You know, there's a lot of companies that want to give you their spiel on why you should do it, why you should hire them to help you kind of put these things into effect. But the big question is, does it work? And the answer is absolutely it does. And I started posting YouTube videos about 3 years ago. They're about a minute and a half to 3 minutes long. Got a channel called Jeff Ritter Golf, which has got 75 videos, which you can access through my website. But like we talked about, it's got about 3 million views. And some of the things that have happened through YouTube is 2 years ago, I went to Liverpool. And did a great golf school over there for 2 weeks. Got a chance to go to a Beatles festival right there in Liverpool.
Very cool.
I'm a big music fan, so that, you know, was like a life experience. It's, you know, not just coaching locally, but being able to really travel abroad and leverage.
Tell me that one. Got to repeat the story because I want these guys to be able to ask some questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I've been able to do more things on a global level, and I answer questions on a weekly basis from all over the world. And, one gentleman had been contacting me from Korea for the last couple of months and, you know, insinuating that he was really serious about coming over. But the thing is that his English, he doesn't speak English, actually. So, I mean, his English in writing was extremely broken. And the funny thing was that 2 days later, I would get another email, and his English would be perfect. So a lot of times with the internet and email, you're not sure what's real and what isn't. It turned out that he had a cousin in Los Angeles that when he had the time was actually translating all of his messages, so that's why one was broken and one was actually perfect. But he actually showed up in the United States about 2 weeks ago without really notifying me that he was coming. He talked about it, but he didn't say, I'm coming this date and this is when we're starting. So he came to the States, he flew into Phoenix, he had his bag of gifts from the duty-free shop, and then I got an email when I was down in Florida. He says, I'm here in Phoenix. Let's get started. I said, well, I'm not in Phoenix. You know, of course, now he doesn't know anybody here, and now he's got to sort of wander the streets of Phoenix for a week until I get back. So he came back. We met in person. You know, communicating was difficult, but we sat down, and in about a half an hour, we decided that he was going to do some coaching, and he really let me know that not only did he want some coaching, he wanted a lot of it, basically an hour a day, 5 days a week for 3 months. And then that's actually been bolstered to nearly 2 hours a day lately. And, you know, he's just really passionate about the game. And the cool thing about this and the really amazing thing about this is that, you know, he doesn't have the opportunity to play golf courses in Korea where he's at. So he's been actually hitting shots into a net off of a mat, looking at his swing on video, basically hitting the same club over and over a 6 hour.
How's his swing?
It's unbelievable. And I say unbelievable because it looks just like mine.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, right. But that's not, I'm not being arrogant here. That's not the unbelievable part of it. But basically, you know, and asking him, you know, about his game, I said, well, how long have you, you know, been involved with the game? He says, oh, I've been practicing for 1 year and 6 months. I've practiced for a year and a half. And I said, well, you know, just like I always ask other clients, I said, well, what kind of coaching have you had? How did you learn how to play? Because, I mean, his swing was very, very good. It was fundamentally sound. It very closely resembled a lot of the things that I do with my swing. And his ball striking was very advanced for someone that's been playing as long as he has. So I said, where did you learn?
Or as short as he has, yeah.
Yeah, or as short as he has. So I said, where did you learn? And he looked at me and said, by watching you on YouTube.
Yikes.
Yeah, so basically, you know, he couldn't hear a single thing that I was saying, you know, on YouTube. He couldn't translate it into Korean. But he watched my swing over and over again. He was diligent with his practice. And he learned to build one heck of a golf swing. And it's one of those moments in coaching where you really realize not only the power of an image, but the power of media to really transcend. So he's been out here for 2 weeks now. We've been having a great time. I got him tickets to the Phoenix Open, which is something that he had never been able to do. And you know, I really feel...
Have you had a chance to go out on the golf course with him?
Yeah, we did. We went out the other day. And
what happened?
And of course I asked him, I said, so when's the last time you played? He said, never play, first time. So, you know, he's got this 6-iron swing groove, so he, you know, he hits a driver and he kind of hits into the right rough, and then he pitches it out, and then he hits a perfect 6-iron down to the green, of course, because that's his money club. But he doesn't know how to chip, pitch, putt, or anything like that. So the last couple of days, we've really been trying to get him to get into the groove of playing. So a lot of our lessons have been practicing like you play. He hits a driver, he hits a 6 or 7 iron. I make him hit a pitch shot. We walk over to the putting green. We roll a putt, and we go through that progression over and over again, because his dream is to be able to go back and actually coach golf in Korea.
Okay.
And feel respected because he learned from someone in America. And I told him that if you're going to coach golf, it's not just about the swing, it's about the game. So we're really talking about learning how to connect with the game, being able to hit all the shots, and being able to share his experience on a level that's beyond just technical.
Amazing. That's a phenomenal story.
Yeah, I'm having a great time with
it. It's kind of spooky, too.
It is.
I want to open it up. We've got our Golf Smarter adventure has been, we've played 3 rounds already. We opened up at Greyhawk, and we were all completely frustrated by that golf course because the greens were lightning fast and kind of like the pyramids. Mm. You know, like the courses, the greens came to a peak at the top. And if you didn't land it right there and leave it there, it just fell off the side and was... It was a great course, and we want to thank Doug Hodge for all his hospitality there. But it was really difficult for us. The next day, we played True North and had a great time. And we all loved the course, and it was a beautiful day. The weather's been fantastic. I've been warning you for a long time. You know, leave the bad weather and come out and play with us. Leave Canada and Rich and come out and play with us, because we've been blessed with some great weather, and we've played... True North, thanks to Lon Grundy. That was wonderful. And today we did TPC. And I think, you know, as much as we enjoyed TPC Stadium course today, I think the highlight for me was number 16 and going out to that hole with all the grandstands up. And I was playing, it was interesting because Rich and I were playing as a twosome, and then Bob, George, and Lou were playing a threesome in front of us. And we were teamed up with these two kids who played college golf at American University. And these kids could hit the ball a ton. I mean, this one guy was hitting the ball, and it spent more time going up than my drive would spend in the air, land, roll, and stop. I mean, it was just a thing of beauty to watch. Plus the sound that it made, because we were standing on the white tees, and they just wanted to play all the way back. So the sound that it made as it was going by us was something that you only hear at, like, airports. And I was like, oh, phenomenal. And so we all got to number 16, and these guys, and he even made the comment before he hit the ball, he goes, wow, it's amazing how little pressure there is when there's no one in these stands, because there's stands for 20,000 people sitting around us, and everybody missed the green. Did you guys hit the green?
Yeah, we had two of three.
Two of the three
yeah.
hit the green?
I hit the green, but mine rolled off.
Well, I hit the green, too, and it rolled off, and then
you know,
it fell.
Funny, though, when you said that?
Wait a minute. Go ahead, tell the story, Rich.
What was so funny about that comment was, I was just about to hit the ball, and as I was on my backswing, I hear him make that comment, oh, yeah, there's no pressure. You imagine if there was all these 16,000. Just as I'm coming down, I thought of it going, oh, yeah. And that was when I hit and the ball just trickled in front of me. I'm like, thanks, guys.
Yeah, that was really a treat.
I'd like to take a second and just thank you, Fred, for organizing this adventure and saying to all the people out there listening today or tonight, whenever that may be, whatever month that may be, that if you... if you get the opportunity to spend time with Fred Green and his pals, you're going to have a great time.
Let's move on to ask questions.
No, you really are. You're going to have a great time, and you're going to meet great people and make new friends, which I've done and I've enjoyed, and so I'll thank you for that. And
thank you.
Back to Jeff and yourself.
Do you want to ask Jeff?
I'm a cold weather golf guy.
Okay.
Jeff, so I'm in Salt Lake, and I come to Arizona some, and I'm back and forth, different kinds of greens, different kinds of fairways. It may be 2 or 3 months when I don't get to play golf, and then I go and play somewhere. So I don't have the luxury of, and neither does Rich from Canada, of playing year-round. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you have any advice or comments on teaching and how to approach the game. You know, my short game, especially as I get older, I've noticed, well, I got to touch that club a few times a week, or my sandwich is not going to be really whippy when I get out there and have that 30-yard chip shot uphill and so on, like we had at Raptor. You guys all got to witness that. We still had a lot of fun, but it was difficult. And so I wonder what you'd say to people that are in cold weather right now or next winter.
The big thing you have to do is really try and stay connected with the game and stay connected with your equipment. I took up playing guitar about 8 years ago, and it was like the hardest thing I've ever tried to do in my life. But I actually got to the point where I could play songs, and then I started a little band and we started playing around town. But it was really putting myself back into the learning environment again, becoming a student. And a lot of times in life, we're not really students anymore, especially if we're coaching a sport. It's one of these things we've done since we were kids, and sometimes we forget what it's like to have a new grip or a new stance or a new posture. And when you pick up a musical instrument or learn how to do anything that's different from what you coach, it becomes really difficult. So I was actually at this show, and I saw this guy who was absolutely amazing. I mean, the songs he was playing, the way he was moving, it was like his instrument was part of it, an extension of it. And a buddy of mine said, man, he must spend a lot of time with that guitar. And that really, you know, struck a chord with me. So I said, you know what? If I'm going to try and become a better guitarist, I'm going to have this thing around my neck all the time. You know, when I'm on the phone, you know, when I'm making breakfast, you know, when I'm, you know, letting my dog out, I need to make this thing feel like it's part of me. So when your year is over, when your season is over, don't take your clubs and just put them in the garage. Make sure you have them laying around. Every time you walk past them, pick them up, waggle them, look at the quality of your grip, you know, consider how it could be better, feel the pressure in your arms, and get in front of your sliding glass door and look at your posture from a perspective that maybe you haven't done before. If you spend time with your equipment, it's going to become an extension of you, and you're going to become comfortable with it. And then the emotion and the ideas that you start to see on the golf course as it relates to what you want to create all of a sudden become possible. Because the object doesn't feel so foreign. It becomes an instrument for creativity versus a club. We all know that most people have the ability to video themselves very easily, whether it's on a smartphone or a handheld. You know, so go ahead and go into your garage, grab a welcome mat, drop down a wiffle ball, and hit a few shots into it. You can very easily now with some of these iPhone apps and Android apps, you can actually draw lines. So if you can understand the basic lines you would draw as a coach, you can look at how to evaluate your posture. You can look at the basic shape of your swing. You can, of course, look at stance width and ball position. Just looking at the squareness of your club face. These are things that you don't have to know that much about from a coaching perspective to be able to see and develop an awareness of what you're doing now. And then from there, if you're able to get with a coach, even in a winter climate, to say, hey, I'm going to spend some time. Could you help me create a plan? Then on your own, you know, through holding your club and moving and actually having some feedback. Feedback's a big part of the learning process. Then you can make a lot of progress. And the next time you go out, maybe be further along than you'd be if you just kind of took to those clubs and stuck them in the garage and didn't touch them.
That's great advice. Great. Lou, you have a question?
Yeah.
Here. Grab that. Talk.
Thanks. Thanks. Jeff, let's say that you and I connect as, you know, coach and pupil. Okay, I sign up. How often should I see you? How often should, how long do I need to allocate for our first encounter? What's our first dialogue?
Right. The first dialogue is establishing what you want out of the experience. A lot of times golf instructors, they already have a preconceived plan of what they're going to create for you. And and you haven't even told them what you want just yet. So the big thing is I have to figure out what kind of a lesson you want from me. Do you want a corrective lesson or do you want a developmental lesson? And that's really important because those are the two kinds of lessons that I give. So, for example, let's say, what's your handicap right now?
13.
Lou said 13. I'm not sure I buy it.
So let's say you're 13 handicap, and all of a sudden you start playing like a 25. And you don't know why you're playing a 25. You're just not playing like a 13 anymore. Somewhere along the line, your swing has gotten out of balance to the point where you can't create an impact that gets the ball to go from point A to point B. So when I say in balance, every golf swing either has zero mistakes, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, or 12. That is, if it's actually striking the ball solidly and getting it on target. So if you have an odd number of mistakes in your swing, you start topping, shanking, slicing more than normal. So if you're a 13, maybe your swing's not perfect, it's not tour quality, but you're balancing your effort in a way which allows you to have a good time. So if I assume that you want to be a scratch golfer, then I'm going to take you on a journey that's going to be so long and have so many peaks and valleys that eventually you might get down to that, but it might not be what you're looking for. Maybe the whole reason why you want to be a 13 is so that with your handicap, you can stop losing your butt to your buddies on Saturday morning. So if you want to get a corrective lesson and get back in balance, all I have to do is recognize where I can add or subtract one, get your swing back in balance, and all of a sudden, boom, you're a 13 like that again.
Yeah. So you got to understand that my objective, this is the fourth encounter that I had with Fred in one of these adventures or weekends. Three of the four, Fred and I have come out exactly even over the rounds. So my objective is to be one better than Fred.
I see. Oh. All right. One better than Fred. All right, so then you might need a developmental lesson, or maybe you just need a putting or a chipping lesson to try and pick up a stroke here. There, but
what about developmentally disabled, I think.
So that's important to know what kind of lesson you want. So if you want a developmental lesson, then what I have to be able to do is I have to be able to create a blueprint and a long-term big picture, so to speak, of what we're going to do, why it's going to work, and how we're going to get there. Most golfers, when they read magazines or watch TV shows like the Golf Channel, I mean, basically they're getting tips, they're getting ideas. The tips and ideas are what I call tools. So, for example, if I had a big pile of money and I called the best contractor in town, I said, I want you to meet me at the corner of Maple and Oak tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and we're going to build something. What is he going to say to me? He's going to say, well, what are we going to build? And I might say, well, it doesn't matter. You guys are the best. We'll figure it out when we get here. Well, unless I tell him what we're going to build, he doesn't know what tools to bring. So with the golf swing, most people are picking tools out of their toolbox, which comes from magazines and TV shows and radio shows. And they never really define what they're going for, what they're trying to build. So if I had a goal of getting on top of this building, right, that's my goal, that's my blueprint, I got to get from point A to point B. Well, there's a lot of tools that I could pick that would get me there. I could get a rope, I could get a ladder, I could get a cherry picker. If someone brings a wheelbarrow and says, what about this? It's not going to get us from a low point to a high point. But all those other things are tools that will actually help me accomplish that goal. So if we want to improve our backswing or add more club head speed, and we've clearly defined what the blueprint is, then I can start picking drills and ideas that will help you along the way and are guaranteed to give you progress. So it's really all about, number one, getting a blueprint, being clear with that, deciding as a team what tools we're going to use to get there. Maybe along the line, you figure that one or two of the drills I give you out of the five are ones that you really like, and they become, the drills you really hang your hat on. Beyond that, how often you see me is really predicated on if you're able to practice between lessons. So, for example, as long as someone can practice once after lesson number one, then they're free to come in for lesson number two. If they don't practice and have a chance to experience the curriculum, then I'm not able to see how they're responding to it. And I very often end up giving lesson number one again. Practice can come in many different forms. I had a gentleman come in today. He said, you know what, I got three kids and I'm busy. I really want to do this. I don't have time to practice. And we were talking about this idea of trying to not sway side to side, but actually feel pivot. So a lot of times in life, when we're waiting in line at the bank, we might balance ourselves on one foot. Very seldom do we stand evenly on 2 feet. So I said, go ahead and show me how you would stand if we were in line at the bank. So we just kind of stood on one foot, his right foot was off the ground a little bit, and he had his arms crossed, you know, because he was actually waiting for the teller. I said, well, this is a perfect opportunity to practice a pivot drill. So I said, go ahead and just swivel side to side. Not so much that people think you're crazy, right? Just swivel side to side. I said, can you feel yourself moving in a circle? Can you feel how your head's not moving left and right? I said, right now you're practicing your golf swing. So really simple things that you can pull from to give you the idea of a concept really make it easy for you to put it into play. So practice is very easy to find pretty much anywhere you look. You have to have a blueprint. Then you have to be able to pick the tools that are going to get the job done. If you do those things, anybody can make progress and make progress very quickly.
Awesome. Oh, that's really an excellent point. Well, listen, we've got an early morning tea time tomorrow morning.
All right.
And I really want to thank you so much
for coming out.
This has been a blast. And I want to thank Dixon Golf. Not only for supplying everybody on the Golf Smarter Adventure with golf balls, even trying out the Fireball.
Very cool.
We've been trying the Fireball. I like them. It's a problem. They're too expensive for me, but they're really good. But they also were very generous in hosting you and Kate in tonight's dinner. You didn't know that. But that was really nice. So I want to thank Dixon Golf for all their help in this. And I also want to put out some shout-outs for the Scottsdale Convention and Visitors Bureau for being very supportive of the Golf Smarter Adventure, and mostly to the folks at the Zona Resorts and Suites, Ted Maitland and his crew. They do all the golf adventures here. I don't even know if they call them adventures, but if you're planning a golf outing to Scottsdale, not only is Zona Resort Suites a great place to stay, but they have a staff of people here that know the area intimately, and they know all the people out here, and they can help you out to set this trip up. So I want to thank them very much for all their help here. And I also want to thank my wife, Joanne, who's been sitting here going, I hate golf. I don't want to hear about this anymore. But thank you for your support.
Sounded very interesting.
Thank you very much. And I just want you to know that the other day, George and I were playing together, and I had a shot, and I hit it really well, and I felt great about it. And I said to George, I said, wow, that really felt good. And he said, it's worked for your host, Fred Green. So, again, thanks, everybody. This has been a blast. Jeff, thanks so much. And you'll be back.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right. Guys?
Great.
One more round of golf. And thanks so much. It's been great. Thank you.
Just a side note, if you'd like to see a video of the Korean player's swing that Jeff was talking about, I just posted it on our Golf Smarter group page on Facebook. Next up, for members only, Darren G. of the Spirit of Golf Academy in Hawaii returns to discuss his books on the seven principles and the seven personalities of golf. You know, if you're not a premium subscriber, you're only getting half of our shows. Don't miss a single episode. Join Golf Smarter for members only today. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.